But the question remains, when will our southern border be closed to illegal immigration? Do Republicans expect Speaker Nancy Pelosi to negotiate in good faith? We'll talk about that and the growing crisis in Venezuela with Florida Congressman Ted Yoho, member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And the outrage over New York's sweeping abortion law is growing as more Americans find out what Governor Cuomo's new law actually does. Petrina Mosley, Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy here at the Family Research Council, joins us with a deep dive into what this law actually does. Then later in the program, Dr. Ingrid Skop, an OBGYN, is here to tackle the top 10 myths about abortion that laws like the one passed in New York last week are built upon. Also, conservative leaders are calling for the resignation of the Republican Party chairman in Florida, who happens to also be a state senator. Why? John Stenberger, president and general counsel of the Florida Family Policy Council, is here to tell us why. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, President Trump has recognized opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim president, insisting that Guaido is the key to restoring the country's democracy. My guest is Republican Congressman Ted Yoho, who represents the 3rd District of Florida and serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, Congressman, the crisis there in Venezuela seems to be building as Nicolas Maduro refusing to release the control of the government, saying that he is the duly elected president. He's dug in. He has the military on his side. He's saying the U.S. is orchestrating a coup by encouraging Guaido. So where do we stand? What's going to happen here?
I applaud President Trump for reaching out and proclaiming Juan Guaido as the legitimate president. You know, what Mr. Guaido is doing is he's claiming leadership according to the Constitution that was set up by Chavez and Nicolas Maduro. You know, he's, you know, not wanting anybody to challenge him. And as we know, that last election was a scam. And so I think what you're going to see, and you're already seeing a rise of all these other nations not recognizing Nicolas Maduro as the legitimate president, but they're looking at Mr. Guaido. And I think what you're going to see is a quick turnaround of leadership in Venezuela. The people are on Guaido's side, not Maduro's.
Now, Maduro, with the United States taking the stand that they have, he is essentially cut off economically from tapping into a lot of the overseas accounts and monies that they have
right.
that they need in an economy that's quickly spiraling downward.
It has, and it's gone down that much faster since Mr. Maduro's been president. And this is something we've talked about on Foreign Affairs. Their biggest source of income is the oil revenue. And, you know, what you're going to see is sanctions, if not taking over of these organizations to keep that money out of Maduro's hands. And I'm sure you've already talked about this, but we know there's over 2 million refugees from Venezuela. And I meet with ambassadors from all over the Caribbean and South America, and they're talking about the stress it's putting on countries like Peru and Colombia and other countries around that area. They're just not set up to take this many refugees, and this is something that needs to come to an end from a humanitarian crisis to an economic crisis that's been fabricated by Maduro, and we look forward to a quick and as peaceful as possible to get this resolved
now,
for the people of Venezuela.
As you mentioned, the humanitarian crisis under Maduro, that we've seen this rapid inflationary rates that are taking place.
Oh, terrible.
There. And people are literally starving. This is a huge humanitarian crisis. How quickly is the United States committed to seeing this resolved?
Well, we've already put up pledges for food aid, and I think it was $20 million is what I saw earlier. This is something we can rapid respond. you know, with our base there in Guantanamo. This is one of the reasons we got to keep the Guantanamo Naval Base. This is something we can have hospital ships sent out. This is something that the world is standing up, and this is what it's going to take, is the world community coming up and saying, enough of this nonsense, it's not working, and you're not the legitimate leader, Mr. Maduro. Turn the reins over to somebody that's going to put what's best for the Venezuela and the Venezuelan people.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. My guest, Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida, discussing the issue, the growing crisis in Venezuela. We're going to talk in a moment just about our southern border, but I want to ask you this. This has been a problem that has been, you know, in the making for quite some time. One of your colleagues, Francis Rooney, who also serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, wrote this. He said, too often Latin America's strategic importance has been overlooked by the United States policymakers, which is a mistake because instability in the region undermines security in the entire Western Hemisphere. The corrupt socialist regime in Venezuela, which has links to terrorist groups in the Middle East, is a prime example of why instability in Latin America should be a major focus of U.S. policymakers. And we haven't seen it in the last decade be an issue of concern for our government.
No, we haven't, and Francis is spot on there. And, you know, Francis was the ambassador to the sea over at the Vatican and very astute at what he does. And he outlines this very succinctly. You know, you look at the countries that want to support Venezuela and Maduro. You've got Russia, Iran, Turkey, and China, all anti-Western democracies, all authoritarian governments, all anti-Christian. And I think that's a strong signal in itself. And this is in the Western Hemisphere. It's going to affect people here in North America, probably like we've not seen before. You know, and as you know, there's 70 million displaced refugees around the world because of conflict zones. What we don't need is more conflict zones, especially in the Western Hemisphere, because those refugees are going to come to the southwest border like we've never seen before.
Right.
It'll make those caravans coming up from Honduras look like child's play.
Exactly. And all the more reason that this issue on our border has to be addressed now.
It must be addressed.
The president, you know, when reopened government for 3 weeks based upon a promise that there would be negotiations with the House Speaker and the minority leader in the Senate, the Democratic Party. Good news, just a little bit ago, Nancy Pelosi did invite the president to give the State of the Union on February the 5th, so maybe things are moving in the right direction. Are you confident that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats will negotiate in good faith with the president over border security?
I think they'll be earnest in their negotiations. You know, it depends on what you'd call border security. You know, we define it one way, they define it another way. But there's been enough Democrats saying that, well, there's portions that need a wall, build a wall. And I think the president was very succinct in his speech last Saturday, very just to the point that we will have physical barriers where they tell us we need them. And so we'll see how earnest Ms. Pelosi is with her team, and hopefully she'll put policy, and that policy is for border security, for America's security, and not play politics over policy.
I think you're spot on. I hope you are correct. I hope she'll do that. I think the president, in his number one, he did two things last week. One is that he said, okay, you don't want me to do the State of the Union? Fine, I'll do it when the government reopens. I think he kind of let the pressure off there, stepped back instead of counterpunching. And then I think when he, you know, understood that we needed to get the, he wanted to get the government going again, but said, okay, if you'll have good faith negotiations, we can do it for 3 weeks. I think the president here is showing that he is the one willing to negotiate, willing to compromise, but not sacrifice what he said he wants to accomplish, and that is border security. At the end of the day, I wonder, Congressman Yoho, if the president's not going to get it done one way or the other.
No, I have to agree with you. I think what he did is he showed leadership, and at the same time, he articulated his strong stance. I would have to venture that you're going to see border security done the way it's supposed to be done. You're going to use technology in some places. You're going to use border fencing and blockades in some areas. And then the increased in agents, increased in judges adjudicating these cases. And what you'll see is I truly believe that at the end of the day, come February 15th, and I hope it's done bipartisanly and negotiated, but regardless, you will see a process in place where border security is no longer going to be a talking point. It's going to be a reality.
I hope you are correct in a meeting I have with the president last week.
I feel real confident about that.
Well, I think this president understands the point that we are at as a nation in terms of the need for the border security and also his place in history to get it done. And just from your standpoint as a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, in addition to being a member of Congress, how significant is it of a problem that the open, porous border and how essential is it that we get this fixed now?
Tony, I mean, if you just go by the facts, there shouldn't even be a question, and it's not a Republican or a Democrat, conservative or liberal. This is an issue that's affecting everyday Americans. There's over 300 people die every week from the fentanyl coming up from our southwest borders. Some of it comes through legitimate checkpoints that both sides want to put more money into so that we catch that, but a lot of it comes across our border illegally where there is no checkpoints. This is something, when you look at the cost of that medically, it's astronomical. When you look at the cost on society, it's astronomical. And then you put in the people that come in here illegally to do harm, whether it's an MS-13 gang member or if it's somebody that's here and they're, you know, a habitual felon that keeps coming back to this country, and then they're the ones that wind up shooting police officers or DUIs. Right. This is something that we need to bring an end to and send a signal to the rest of the world that if you want to come to America, there's plenty of opportunities and portals to come here legally. You're not coming in illegal. And I think this is something that's imperative. We as a nation, we have that ability. We have that responsibility. And I think you'll see it get done.
Congressman Ted Yoho, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you, and take care. See you soon.
As always, thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right, Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida. You know, this issue of our border, this is a problem that will not solve itself. You know, they keep kicking this can down the road, and it's like compound interest. It only grows, but in a negative sense. It only gets bigger, and it's been growing for over two decades. And I do think this president understands he is the one that can fix it, and I think he is intent on doing that. All right, coming up next, we're going to take a deeper look at the outrageous law adopted by New York last week on abortion. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand and if a fetus does, in fact, feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, you most likely have heard of the sweeping abortion law that was signed into law last week by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Now, he signed it on Tuesday night, actually the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. It is the most extreme state abortion law that we've seen in decades. Because science and technology, and we're going to talk about that later, is moving us toward a view of the, well, basically protecting the baby in the womb because we recognize it's a baby. But on the night that it passed, the One World Trade Center was lit up in celebration of the passage of the law. And I don't think this was missed on a lot of people. That's the very site where 2,753 Americans were killed on 9/11. But yet we're celebrating abortion, where about 3,000 babies are killed a day in abortion in America. Well, what exactly does this law do? There's outrage, rightfully so, but what does it do, and how can we combat it? Joining me now to talk about it is our own Patrina Mosley. She's the Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy here at the Family Research Council. Patrina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Okay, give us the breakdown. What does this bill do?
Okay, this bill is bad all the way around. It is called the Reproductive Health Act, but for most people right now who are hearing about this, for them it's the Abortion Just Got Real Act, because this bill will allow abortions up to the moment of birth, where a baby is big enough to hold in your arms. So they tout this bill as, this is progressive for women, we're moving in the right direction, this is great. But anytime the left says this is going to be progressive for women, is usually not true, is not the case. Instead, this Reproductive Health Act, it actually hurts women's health and their safety. First, the Reproductive Health Act would allow non-physicians to perform abortions all the way up into the third trimester. Already, abortion clinics aren't nearly as regulated as nail salons and veterinary clinics. This is preposterous.
So anybody, what kind? I mean, they don't even have to go to medical school, right?
Right. Non-physicians, nurses, aide, midwives, that type of category.
Is there able any certification there on who can do this?
Yeah, if you're certified, you definitely can do it. If you're not certified, you can do this as well. And this does nothing for women's health and their safety when already they're going and having abortions and getting those procedures botched by people who have license. So this is terrible. The next thing, man, this Reproductive Health Act would also repeal existing laws that punish persons who harm pregnant women in an attempt to harm the woman's child. So, for example, let's say you have an angry boyfriend or an angry husband who doesn't want their partner to be pregnant. If he proceeds to be violent with her and the baby inside her dies, he doesn't have to be prosecuted for that. He'll be prosecuted for the assault, but not for killing the unborn baby.
I mean, that's even moving away from what the federal law has done in terms of recognizing the humanity of the unborn baby that is killed in an act of violence.
Exactly. This goes well beyond the scope of any abortion case at the Supreme Court, any abortion laws at the state and federal level. The other thing that this bill would do as well is repeal existing laws that protect viable babies who are aborted in a late-term pregnancy, but they're born alive.
Right.
So at this point,
just to explain that for our listeners, is the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, that's when an abortion doesn't go as planned and the baby is actually born alive. They are required under the law to offer medical assistance to save that life, because that is now we know it's a baby before then, but it has been born. This under this new New York law would say you don't have to render aid. You can just let the baby lie there and die and suffer in the process.
Absolutely. All in the name of not being a burden to a woman's access to that abortion.
I mean, this is no wonder people are outraged. This is barbaric. I mean, we're at a point where technology and science, 46 years ago that was not there, that's there today, makes it very clear that these babies not only are babies, but they can survive outside the womb, even at 20, 22 weeks or even sometimes sooner than that. And we're talking about all the way up to the ninth month of pregnancy.
All the way up to the ninth month of pregnancy, all for the reason for health, which has been expanded to mean a various amount of things, economic health, psychological health, emotional health, all kinds of things have been compensated in that terminology to, quote unquote, expand a woman's access to abortion. And at this point, like you just stated, we know a baby can feel pain at 20 weeks, how much more at the point where they're able to be held in your arms? And, with Governor Cuomo lighting up the World Trade Center in the color pink, some saying it's crass and it's untastely. But, Tony, I say it's scary. I mean, it's one thing to be pro-choice. It's another thing to expand abortion up to the point of birth where everyone in their right minds knows that it's a baby. And with earlier abortion laws, maybe in the first trimester and the second trimester, pro-choices can kind of keep this cognitive dissonance that it's not a baby. But at this point, we all know that it's a baby. And even those who are pro-choice, who are Democrats, they're like, you know what? Yeah, I'm pro-choice, but I don't know if I want to start dancing on the ceiling for the point where we know we can hold this baby in our arms. So this isn't just crass. This is scary.
It is. And I'm wondering if this is the face of the new Democratic Party. This certainly is reflective of their party's platform. Petrina, thanks so much for joining us. Out of time, but very insightful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Petrina Mosley. To find out more, we actually have some resources available for you on the website, TonyPerkins.com. A little bit later, we're going to be joined by an OBGYN to talk about the 10 myths of abortion. And it's the myths that laws like this are built upon. So we're going to look at that. That resource is also available at the website. But first, when we come back, John Stenberger of Florida joins us to tell us why he's demanding the state party chairman resign. That's next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved Elf on a Shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, still to come in the next segment, we're going to return to the issue of the abortion law in New York, because actually there are several other states that are considering similar type measures. And we've got some real information on these torpedoes, these 10 myths that so many of these laws are built upon. So we're going to talk about that in the next segment. But first, joining me now is John Stenberger. He is the general counsel and president of the Florida Policy Council, a good friend of ours. And he today, this is hot off the wire, is calling for the resignation of the chairman of the Republican Party of the state of Florida. And he joins us to tell us why. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
All right, John, this is a pretty big deal. You're calling for the state party chairman to resign. He also happens to be a state senator. Why?
Well, for the first time in American political history, a party chairman of the Republican Party is sponsoring, he's the primary sponsor for a SOGI bill, which is adds the term sexual orientation and gender identity to the non-discrimination laws. And, of course, this is the defining cultural issue of our moment that is out of step with the GOP platform, which specifically denounces these laws. It's out of step with the administration for the president. It's out of step with our new governor, Ron DeSantis, who just issued an executive order himself on inclusion and did not include sexual orientation and gender identity. It's out of step with his base. It's just a brazen move. As you know, these laws are dangerous. They invade women's privacy and personal space when it comes to showers and locker rooms and bathrooms. And they also infringe upon constitutional rights because they're basically weapons to punish Christians who are business owners who are running their business recognizing traditional concepts of gender and marriage and these types of things. So it's just really egregious, and we're calling for him to either disavow the bill, which we gave him a courtesy call and asked him to do. He did not, so we're calling for his resignation as the state party chairman.
And John, this is what you just laid out there. This is not theoretical or hypothetical. We know this to be the case with these sexual orientation and gender identity bills that are being, you know, initially they were done through small communities where and in states where the activists from the LGBT community were able to hijack these human rights commissions and use these provisions to, as you say, target Christians who simply want to operate their businesses and live by their Christian faith. As you pointed out, to have a Republican Party leader initiate this at the state level, this is quite significant. It would be far-reaching in its effect.
That's right. He's being encouraged also, unfortunately, by Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, who is in the same boat as he is in terms of favoring these pro-new gay rights classes. And people don't understand, when you create a new legal category for sexual orientation and gender identity, there's profound consequences. And we're seeing that, the Bernell Stutzmans of the world, the Jack Phillips, and we're seeing these things. We're seeing the gross invasions of privacy where, you know, unfortunately now every year there's more gender fluid issues where men can just unilaterally express themselves to be women and go into showers and locker rooms. It's just, it's unimaginable, Tony. We're just at the place where we're saying, look, if you're not going to respect the privacy and the dignity of women and children, and if you're not going to respect constitutional rights, basic core rights of freedom of speech and religious liberty, we have no use for you. I mean, you literally need to be taken out and replaced.
So how do they deal with, how does he deal in this proposed law with the schools? As you've pointed out, this is exposing women, children to dangerous situations in many jurisdictions where it opens up the restrooms, the showers, the locker rooms. And if someone says, hey, I feel like a woman, they can use those facilities. Are there any protections here that he even tries to put forward?
There is a statement that talks about nothing in this bill shall run afoul of the, you know, the U.S. Constitution or the state constitution, but it's vague and not specific. And, you know, just to be fair, his argument is we need to expand the base of the Republican Party. And so many city councils and county commissions have adopted these things. So let's just do this because we need to expand the base. Well, you don't expand the base with bad ideas. You expand the base with good ideas and good public policy. And just because, you know, so many city councils and county commissions have done something that's bad, you don't have to repeat it. We have to identify what's good policy and what's bad. And, you know, this is just an outrageous thing. And so we've tried to be cordial with him. We've tried to approach him. And so now we're going to run a campaign to basically remove him as the party chairman.
All right. So what should our listeners in Florida be doing?
Yeah, go to FloridaFamilyAction.org, FloridaFamilyAction.org, and call, write, email him, tweet out, and ask him to basically back down from sponsoring this bill. There's no need for it whatsoever. He claims that, you know, because it doesn't go as far enough as the gay rights activists would like him to go, they're not supporting it. So he thinks it's a good piece of public policy because they're opposing it. But it's still a bad piece of legislation, and for all the reasons that we talked about. But FloridaFamilyAction.org, just communicate to Senator Gruters that this is bad policy, does not represent rank and file Republicans in any way. It actually works against them because people are already frustrated with the Republican Party to begin with, and now if they start doing this, it's going to make it even worse.
I agree. All right, John Stenberger, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Folks, do that. Go to the website and weigh in on this. Bad public policy is never a justification for expanding the political base. All right, when we come back, Dr. Ingrid Skop is here to talk about the 10 myths of abortion. That's next. You don't want to miss it. Don't go away.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of resources there for you today on the topics we're discussing. We're returning now to the issue of abortion, in particular focusing on what New York did last week. This has gotten a lot of people's attention, and the reason is because it's moving in the opposite direction where America has been moving for really intently for the last decade. You know, in the last decade, we have seen probably close to, I don't have the number right in front of me, but I know that almost a majority of the pro-life laws that have been passed in the last 46 years have occurred in the last 10 to 12 years. And there's a reason for that. There's a couple of reasons for it. One, science and technology. It is so far advanced from what it was 46 years ago when Roe v. Wade was imposed upon the nation by the court. And so we know a lot more. Sonogram has played a key role in, as we've talked about before, you know, the first picture of babies now are generally that you see hanging on refrigerators across America are sonograms, the pictures of the baby in the womb. So that technology has helped. It's humanized the baby in the womb. We can actually see what God has created there in the womb. But also in the last decade in particular, and it was a response to the pushing of pro-abortion policies at the federal level, or the attempt to do so by Barack Obama, led to a big pushback at the state level. And you recall the turning over of many state legislative bodies into the hands of Republicans and conservatives. And with that, a wave of pro-life legislation has passed. A huge wave. So that has led to America moving along that path of becoming a much more pro-life nation. Now, that's the backdrop to what Governor Cuomo of New York signed into law last week. But if you're listening to these arguments, they're based upon falsehoods in many cases. It's their myths. And so the Family Research Council has available for you at our website the top 10 abortion myths. Now, joining me to talk about this is the expert that is featured in this video series. We've got a written document as well as a video series, the top 10 abortion myths, is Dr. Ingrid Skop. She has been a practicing OBGYN in San Antonio for 22 years. She is a fellow at the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And she joins us now to talk more about these 10 abortion myths. Dr. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
All right, let's just dive right into this. When you look at what New York did last week and the justification for it and how those on the outside have trumpeted this and said, yes, we have to do this. This is there. A lot of this is based upon myths, is it not?
Absolutely. I think that, as you mentioned earlier, scientifically, there's no denying that the fetus is a living human being. And I think that what has allowed so many people to continue to say that they're pro-choice, and what has allowed some of these legislation that we see, like in New York, to happen, is that there's a myth that women need abortion, that that the woman's life, the value of her life, trumps that of her fetus, and that there are some things that she is unable to achieve without the ability to abort her baby.
Well, I want to start with myth number one that you identify in the publication we've put together. Abortion does not destroy a human life. That's a myth.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in fact, at the time of Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court justices were a little dishonest in what they said. There was some controversy as to whether a human life begins at conception or whether it begins at implantation, and that's a difference of 5 to 7 days. But what Justice Blackmun said is, if the field of science cannot agree on when life begins, how can we as justices agree? And so therefore, we're just going to put that question aside entirely. They then redefined the fetus in terms of personhood, and they gave him value based on things like consciousness and other things that, I mean, personhood is very vaguely defined, but basically they said, at least in the first 2/3 of pregnancy, there was no value to the fetal life. And even after viability, they said the value really can be determined by the state, whether that child should be protected.
I mean, I don't want to get too far afield here, but that's a scary concept when you look at end-of-life issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that abortion, I'm so proud that March for Life has decided to address the science aspect of it.
Right.
But I think the next place it's going to go is going to be in terms of human rights, because this is the only human life that we say, well, whether it has value depends on other circumstances.
Now, let's talk about another myth that we often hear, and this is kind of the mantra, the chant of the left, that this is a constitutional right, that the women should not have this constitutional right deprived by any means or any method. Is it a constitutional right?
You have to do a lot of wordsmithing and tweaking of arguments to in any way think this is a constitutional life, because again, the most vital and basic constitutional right is the right to life. And again, the fetus is definitely alive. It's a little complicated and it's written in the myths, but basically they took a woman's right to privacy and a woman's right to contraception, which prior Supreme Court cases had agreed that women had a right to, and somehow decided that even though most abortions do not occur in the privacy of a woman's own home, they occur in a doctor's office, somehow this right to privacy encompasses the right to destroy a human life.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can find in the shadows of the Constitution, mm-hmm. Whereas the black and white, very clear that we have, go back to the Declaration of Independence, the preamble, the right to life as an inalienable right. Dr. Scott, these myths, let me take on a couple more of these, because I think it's instructive for our listeners. And by the way, folks, you can go and download the entire publication, The 10 Abortion Myths. Go to TonyPerkins.com. There's also a video there that has Dr. Scott on there, and you can send that around to your friends and help educate them, you know, because the facts, Dr. Scott, I can say the facts are on our side, and oftentimes we simply have been drowned out or we feel intimidated not to speak with the facts, the scientific facts, and with those, the argumentation on our side is overwhelming, and we need to use them, and that's the reason behind these top 10 myths.
Absolutely. Another myth that you'll hear frequently is that abortion is safer than childbirth. And so, again, they try to say women need these abortions because maybe being pregnant will kill them. And that is so erroneous, and it's based on such very, very poor evidence. We don't even look. Most states do not mandate or enforce complication reporting from abortion. So it's basically, if an abortionist wants to report a complication to the health department, he may do so, but of course they don't. And so we have no way of knowing how many women die from complications of abortion and how many women suffer, because unfortunately right now it's the abortion industry that's doing all the studies.
Right.
They're the ones regulating. They're supervising themselves. And as we saw in the case of Kermit Gosnell, the health departments and the legislative bodies that should have an interest in supervising abortionists are backing away because of the politics of the issue. And so it's the Wild West out there for women.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that of this New York law that really struck me, because back it's not quite close to, well, actually it's been 20 years ago when I was in the state legislature in Louisiana, pushed through one of the first abortion clinic regulation acts, which simply brought it into the existing law for ambulatory surgical centers so that they, for the first time, had guidelines, directives. And it was because of near fatalities that occurred in these abortion clinics. And so now under this New York provision, and I guess I ask you this as a doctor, that they're going to allow non-physicians, people who haven't even been to medical school, to perform abortions. I mean, to me, that should outrage every woman in America, regardless of where they stand on the issue of abortion.
It's tragic. And again, they won't be watching. Already, New York they are number two in the country in abortions. And, you know, in New York City, a baby is more likely to be aborted than it is to be born alive. But they're allowing, there's no regulation up until 24 weeks, and then they say for the life and health of the mother afterwards. Well, health is defined in their law as age, social, emotional. So it's not just physical health. Like, basically, if a 15-year-old comes in, they'll say, well, you know, for her emotional health, because she's young, she needs this abortion. And studies tell us that if you do an abortion at viability at about 20 weeks, the woman has a 75 times higher risk of dying from that abortion than if she had it at 8 weeks. So what's going to happen in New York is women are going to start dying, and hopefully somebody's going to be watching. But I think we've all seen that the media tends to downplay this. Nobody really wants to report on it.
Oh, yeah.
And so many of these women die in the shadows, and nobody knows.
Well, certainly they're not going to be reporting on this because, you know, this would put the brakes on any other states pursuing something like this. So you can
mm-hmm.
You can rest assured that anything that's negative about this law will be well hidden by the media. Dr. Scott, I want to address one more of these myths, because this is one that we often hear in this abortion debate, that the government has no right to be involved in the legislation of abortion. Now, this is between a woman and her doctor. But, you know, our government goes to great lengths to protect American citizens. And we recognize that fundamental, as we made reference to earlier, that inalienable right to life. But yet somehow we have been led to believe that when it comes to a baby in the womb, that's where the government's protective ability stops.
Well, it's it's ridiculous to say that the government can't regulate what a person does with their body, because we see this all the time in legislation. I mean, in many states, you're not allowed to do illegal drugs. In many states, you're think about it. Like, we even have caution for women who smoke, you know, in every bathroom and every restaurant in the country, or who drink alcohol. So the government has been involved for a long time in helping in promoting people's health by telling them there's just certain things that you shouldn't be doing with your body. But of course, in this situation, it's even more important, because it's not the woman's body. Yes,
exactly.
That baby is dependent on her body. Yes, he's attached to her body. He's integrally in her body, but he has a separate genetics. He's an absolutely separate person. And so the right to do what you want with your own body ends where what you do is going to harm another person. And that's always been the basis of our laws. That's
yes.
That's one of government's most vital functions, is to make sure that one person's freedom does not harm another person. And that's what's happening here with abortion.
And that is true in every place, as you pointed out, but mm-hmm. abortion, because
yeah.
it has become this sacred element of the left that they have to protect at all cost. Dr. Skop, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for being such an articulate spokesman on behalf of the science, technology, and the truth as it pertains to abortion.
Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it.
Okay. Folks, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. But I do want to encourage you to go there and download the publication regarding the top 10 abortion myths. And again, there's a video there, which, you know, if you like to watch videos, it's there. Dr. Skop is on the video, and you can easily post that on your social media and send it around. This is a great opportunity to educate people when their attention was, kind of aroused by what took place in New York. And so they're saying, well, what's this about? What are people talking about? And so this would give you the ability to counter many of the arguments that those people who are defending this unrestricted abortion, this would give you the ability to counter those arguments. So I encourage you, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, download that publication. It's free. And also the videos there, post that on your social media, send it around to your friends. Folks, this is how we bring back a culture of life. We're moving in the right direction. We're close. We cannot afford to take any steps backwards to where America would celebrate, as they did in New York, the ending of human life. Let's celebrate life, not death. Choose this day life. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.